Welcome to episode 94 of the Geocaching Podcast. I'm your host, XPunkX with Daryl W4. If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners. And that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. To click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-3503-GPS. And on Twitter, we can be found at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Daryl, welcome back. Again, we do not have any Montu with us today. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's lost his voice last I heard, which is a little bit tough, I'm sure, for someone who has to work the phones at a call center.
Yeah, trust me on that. I work phones at a call center, and same thing, man. And when we lose our voice, it's tough, and it hurts all day.
I can only imagine, and, you know, the folks calling in, I feel sorry for them, too.
Yeah, it is. I heard on Monty's Twitter that he was saying that, you know, he feels bad for the people that are calling in, too, because they can barely understand him.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Well, hey, what were you doing this weekend?
Not a whole lot of I was doing a lot of stuff. Actually, we Julie got a new light for our wall, like a wall light. And so I was doing a lot of wiring this weekend, thanks to my father-in-law and my father were helping us out a lot. And so we were doing a lot of just electrical work, stuff that I'm not very good at, but luckily the people that I was with are, so I don't burn down the house. But that's pretty much it. I was inside a lot this weekend running electrical wire. How about yourself?
I wish I would have had some help, because I went out for like three or four new cache publishes at about 5 a.m. on Saturday. I got the first one. Second one, the cords were kind of pointing into a park that was closed. Turns out it was not in the park, so I could have gotten in and probably would have if I had someone else helping me out. And then the third one, I just couldn't find it all, and that turned into a little bit of mess. But later in the day, I got one FDF at least at 5:20, or 5:25, actually. And then a little later on, Dre and I actually went out and did some cache cleanup, a bunch of these new caches that we hit on the way, to and from different places, just new caches that had been published the last couple of months that we hadn't had a chance to go out and get. So that was nice. Sunday, we went out shooting again with some friends to celebrate one of our buddy's birthdays. Went down to Toledo to shoot some trains and had good luck with that. I've got photos on the Flickr stream, of course, and Geek Boy just put that link into the show notes. And I just had a cat jump in my lap. We also had a couple of caches while we were down in Toledo, and that was kind of cool. Introduced one of the guys to caching. He had, heard about it kind of from us, but never been out. And we got quite a bit of data recorded on that one as they were snapping away looking for the cache. It was kind of fun. Well, we got a bunch of news, Andy. Why don't we jump right into that?
News items today is GStack, the geocaching Swiss Army knife, was released version 7.5.1, and that was on Valentine's Day, with several new features and bug fixes. The new features includes a new replacement memory manager. They added the extra Garmin symbols to the drop-down boxes for map source and send a GPS. They've added configuration options of the notes, log, cache, micro, and when double mouse clicking is an option to set open waypoint URL as default, is now using the Google Maps. And they added the new V500 and 550 to the GPS setup dialog. Now, some fixes that went along with this, too, is they fixed the problem when loading waymarking GPX files when the waypoint already exists in the database. They've also fixed an upgrade crash when trying to upgrade to update some old database formats. He fixed a crash when converting log text of some records to the new SQLite database format. And he fixed an out-of-memory error when building long strings in the micros. Also fixed a problem with COM ports greater than 9 when using the GPS receiving the waypoints. Daryl, I hear that there's some long-awaited DeLorme news. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. We've been waiting for this one for a while. DeLorme has released a beta version of firmware 2.5 for the PN40 GPSRs. This is a version that adds the geocaching support, and updaters are now available for both Windows and Mac OS X. Now, this is a beta version, so you know, upgrade with care, but it gets all that stuff that we've been looking for a while, so I gave it a shot and haven't had a chance to go caching with it yet. But we'll have the link in the show notes, and you can download the software, but you have to log into the forums to see those links, and that's the link that we have in the forum or in the show notes is to that forum. Cache information can now be loaded directly into the PN40 and field notes uploaded through the updated geocaching.com website and the new DeLorme browser plugin.
I downloaded the firmware update for that, but haven't got a chance to update my PN40 yet. Haven't really had a whole lot of chance to cache. I haven't got a chance to do that, but we are going to be upgrading and look for a new show soon reviewing the PN40. Daryl and I both have one right now, and we'll be reviewing that and be looking for that soon, fairly soon. And speaking of you know, cachers, most geocachers have likely noticed the changes in the geocaching.com site that hit just a few days after last week's show. Daryl already mentioned the new support for the DeLorme plugin, and that's the most noticeable changes, though, came in the profile page, where you can now select and rate your primary GPS model. The complete list of changes is available in GroundSpeak's forum, and that link will be in the show notes. Go check it out. I've already went ahead and selected my GPS in there, and supposedly so people can go ahead and get an idea of what people are actually using in the field and what people like. Daryl?
Well, I know a bunch of us have been kind of wondering what's going on with where I go. And for those geocachers looking for that update, Jeremy had posted a note to the forum about that. And in short, the project development has been slowed to allocate the resources to the geocaching.com website and to the iPhone app. He's still hoping that a Where I Go player on the iPhone will hit, but says that's down the road a bit. Development still continues on a new version of the Where I Go builder, and it's going to be a web tool. So that will be very handy, and I'm hoping that it's going to be a platform independent, so you can develop on Mac, Windows, Linux, anything you want, pretty much. I'm guessing not the iPhone, though, as that's a little bit too limited.
Yeah.
But their goal is to have that available by the end of May. And a link to that thread is going to be in the forums, in our show notes, and that will take you right to that thread in the forums.
Well, tonight, our main topic tonight, well, there was a lot of news regarding geocaching. Tonight, we're actually talking, and we're going to be welcoming a fellow podcaster and Australian geocacher to the show. If you don't recognize Darren from his GeoTalk podcast, you might have caught him on either the Podcaster Show 149 and 150, or the Cachemaniacs Episode 20. Darren, thanks for taking your time out on Wednesday to chat with us.
Thanks very much, Eddie.
Well, hey, Darren, last time we spoke with you was a couple of years back. And at that point, you had been caching as Spin Doc Bob. Now I know you've changed your name to the Spin Doctors, but as I recall from the interview nearly 2 years ago on Cachemaniacs, the original name came from some time working at NASA. Many things have happened since then, leading to the change in the names. Would you care to share that genesis and changes to us?
I can't believe that's 2 years ago since we last spoke. That's quite a while. I worked at the Canberra Deep Space Tracking Station back in the late 90s. And those who aren't familiar with it, there's a facility at Goldstone in California, and there's another one in Madrid. And their role is to track interplanetary spacecraft, so the Mars rovers and the Cassinis and so forth. And when I was there, I was working as the public relations officer, and a lot of the visiting American engineers and scientists used to say, "Oh, you're the spin doctor." And so when I signed up for geocaching, I actually wanted to be the spin doctor, but that was taken up at the time. So I just said, "Well, I'll use my old university name, which was Bob," and that's another long story. So I combined them together, spin doc Bob. But then almost 12 months to the day, my partner and I had a little baby boy born. And we thought, well, you know, here's an opportunity to maybe, you know, start caching as a team rather than an individual. And it just turned out all I had to do was put an S on the end, and I could get the Spin Doctors. So that's why we are who we are today.
Very cool. And, you know, I think most of us geeks are a little bit envious of that NASA position.
Yeah, it doesn't pay well.
No, but it's a pretty cool looking views, I'm sure.
Yeah, look, it was a lot of fun. I mean, we wouldn't be any further away from the core of what was going on, but it was fun knowing that. I mean, we had these huge dishes that were 70 meters, which, if I do a quick calculation, I think it's about 240 feet across. And it used to be amazing to look outside the window and know that that was the connection with, say, the pictures from the Mars Pathfinder back in 96 or 97. And that was all fun. I was also lucky enough few years later to travel to Pasadena to visit JPL to see some of the work they were doing there, then went to Houston, to Washington, D.C., and then finally to Florida. And I actually got to stand underneath the Space Shuttle Endeavour, which I thought was quite apt because that spacecraft's named after the ship that charted the east coast of Australia with Captain Cook.
Now, according to your geocaching.com profile, you signed up for your account back in July of 2003. Thinking back almost 6 years ago, what made you first want to go and hunt for the junk out in the bush?
That makes me sound quite old, doesn't it? 6 years. Why did I want to do it? When I was younger, I mean, I love bushwalking. I love walking and yeah, and orienteering actually was another sport that I quite enjoyed. But after a while, I sort of fell out of it and spent a lot of time just sitting at home. And I think actually one of my hobbies there for a while was stamp collecting. So you couldn't get more sedentary than that. And then one day I just noticed in the local paper that there was this article about someone who had, or his son had accidentally found this PVC pipe in a park in Canberra. And it then went on to talk about geocaching. And I thought, well, that's an interesting type of hobby and maybe it'll get me out again. And of course, like any new geocacher, I became quite obsessed. You find one and then you find 10 and then you get up to 100 and you think, this is fantastic. And I was fortunate that I was living in Canberra, which is the capital city of Australia. It's not a very large city. It only has about 350,000 people, but it's surrounded by some fantastic national parks. Including the Snowy Mountains, which is the highest peaks in Australia. And so that just spurred me on to keep going because I kept pushing myself to find more and more remote places, and it was very exciting. And now I live in Sydney, which is Australia's largest city. It's a whole new ball game. I mean, I'm rediscovering, or I'm discovering, I should say, a new area that a lot of locals don't even go to. So that's what keeps you going, just seeing more and more places.
Well, and as for seeing a lot of places, I know you've cached in Australia and North America, and I think we had talked about caching in Asia as well. So you've got all of these great places that you've been and checked out through caching, or I believe you guys call it caching. What are some of the differences you've found across these various continents?
I should point out that South Australians say caching, but then they pronounce most words differently. You can ask them about that. What have I noticed that's different? Look, North America, obviously, because that's where it started, has the biggest concentration. And so you find a lot more of the smaller caches, the ones that are easier to get to, a lot more urbans and so forth. In Europe, I didn't do too much caching because I didn't want it to take over from my holiday. But certainly in some of the smaller countries or countries that haven't taken it up as much, like Turkey and Croatia, it's interesting that the caches there are a little more remote. They're not as easy to get to, and they're a little bit larger. So they haven't, I suppose, built up to that point where they're micros. New Zealand is probably one of my favorite places that if I was to go overseas and go caching, because you have some fantastic scenery. And I think, you know, it's a little bit hard for me to say, you know, what is different around the world, because even though I've cached a number of cities, I've only done, say, maybe half a dozen in one, maybe 20 in another. So it varies a lot.
Now, I am jealous because I've been to Australia. I was there for a month, but it was before I did and knew about geocaching. So it really, really makes me want to go back. But I've noticed through listening to your podcast and different times that I've heard you on, you know, Cash Maniacs or Podcaster, there's definitely different language, not language, but like acronyms, things that we use here that maybe we, you know, you say something and we kind of like, what, you know, what's going on? Can you explain some of those different things? And I noticed you said like bushwhacking, maybe, you know, one of them, for example. Anything like that that you've got?
Yeah, look, Sunny, you mentioned earlier that I was on Podcaster. I think it was early last year, and they put me under the microscope and asked me some of those questions. And, you know, there were terms such as we say nappies instead of diaper. I mean, bushwhacking and what do you call it over there?
Like if
yeah, so it's a similar thing. Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it's just the subtleties. There's some words that are slightly different, but yeah, I can't think of too many off the top of my head.
One of the things I really enjoy about listening to your podcast is all of these geographic references that just don't mean anything to me, so I have to go and look them up after the show.
Well, you know, it's the same thing for us. I mean, there's a lot of listeners to all the different podcasts from North America, and a lot of the times we have to even, you know, look up some of the words and look up some of the places. And I think that's one of the great things about having a range of podcasts from around the world is that it does get us to sort of look up what are those places that everyone's talking about, and what are some of those fantastic caches that people mention. And I think, you know, some of us then decide, well, that's what we want to do. So, for example, I was listening to Podcaster a few months back. I think Sunny went up to Half Dome, which is in Yosemite. I mean, for me, that's the sort of caching that I would love to do. And if I ever get back to California, or when I do, that's certainly something that I'd love to set aside a weekend and do. And then, of course, you know, listening to you guys and, you know, trying to dig out caches out of snow. I mean, to me, that sounds like a hoot. I want to give that a go.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot better than it actually is. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, before we move on or continue here, I want to remind everybody, too, that if you have any questions for Darren, give us a call. Our phone number is 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Just go ahead and press the request to talk button in the chat room, or if you're just in the chat room and not on the phone, go ahead and type it out, and we'll ask him. So, Daryl, what's the next question we have here for Darren?
Well, we already kind of started talking about the podcasting, but we were curious, what got you into podcasting? And as I recall, you actually had another podcast even before GeoTalk. You know, are you still doing that podcast? And what was that one?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. I got into podcasting because I used to work for an organization called the CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. And there's no real equivalent in the US to it, but it's sort of, if you combine NOAA and NASA and some of the other science research bodies together in the one group, that's what CSIRO is. And I was working in the communications area there, and we heard about podcasting, and we thought, well, this is another great way of us getting our science, our news about our research out there. And so I worked with the media team. I was in the web team at the time, and we put that to a podcast together there. And then I thought I'd just practice on the side, and I was a friend of mine who still does a podcast, actually. You can check it out. It's called Mr. Science. Mark, he talked me into having a go at it as well, and I was sort of doing a few interviews with scientists, Australian scientists, and putting those up. But since then, I've changed jobs, and now I work for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, the ABC, and so me doing a podcast about science has put me in conflict. So I help out with a couple at work in particular. There's a colleague of mine who does one called Star Stuff, which is a weekly astronomy podcast from the ABC. And it's actually, I think it's about a second most popular podcast from the ABC, and one of the top 20 ones in Australia. And we have a lot of overseas listeners. So there's a plug for Star Stuff.
Now, from our chat room, we have someone named Bella Candy, and their question is, they really enjoyed your video podcast, and they said, what are your inspirations for cache placement?
Well, first on the videos, I mean, they're a lot of fun. They're also a lot of work, and you know, people like Eisenreich who do them quite regularly. I mean, my hat off to him because it does take a lot of work editing a video, but they're a lot of fun, and we've got a few more that we need to put together. Cage placement. Well, look, I've learned over 6 years that the game is different for everyone, and so I've come to the point where I'm no longer critical of what people do or how they place them, because for me, even when I'm searching, one day I may feel like doing a couple of urbans and God forbid a micro or two. Other times I'd go out for a walk. But the ones that I set, typically I like to involve a little bit of a walk, maybe up to an hour, maybe a couple of hours, and then you know, usually an ammo can or a fairly large, you know, clear container at the end. So, yeah, that's what I do.
Now, being that you've finally had the chance to experience an LPC and they're starting to make their way down under, what's your opinion?
Oh, look, Sonny is absolutely right. They're awful. no, look.
Hey, now, you said you weren't going to criticize. You said you weren't going to criticize people.
No, that's true. That's true. Look, they had their place, and actually, when I came back from the US, I then moved house and I moved to a new suburb, and I was walking up to the local shopping centre one night, and I looked at the light posts and I thought, God, they look familiar. In fact, they look like LPCs or light posts that could have an LPC like in the US. So I actually put one together, and then I recorded some audio and sent it to Sonny, and he was quite upset that I'd done it. But it turns out I think there are about two or three that are in the country. The description that I put is very tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I was showing that this is pretty much, you know, the lowest form of evolution as far as geocaching goes, and a lot of people take that joke, and it's quite funny reading the logs on that. So, yeah, but I understand that for some people, you know, it helps them get from explore maybe their town or maybe the township nearby. For others, they're not as mobile, they can't get around. So, you know, there are benefits for them. And also, you know, in the wintertime, you know, when you've got a lot of snow up there, that's also an issue. But I think in Australia here, while we've still got a lot more room in which to expand the activity, I don't think we're going to see LPCs take over, not for at least another decade or two.
Well, that's pretty good. One of our winter problems with LPCs is that they actually get iced up and plowed in. Andy, have you ever run into any of those LPCs where they're buried under, like, you know, 15 feet of snow from the snow plows?
I own one. No, I do. I own one. I adopted it from somebody else. So, in all honesty, I do own one. Well, I own one that I placed. Doesn't usually get plowed up with snow, but I placed that in honor of Podcaster and Sunny. So the other one that I adopted, though, is just an adopted one. So, but yeah, that one has the same problem where it gets so snowed around it where they plowed into the post that you can't even get to it. So yeah, that's one of the problems with them.
It certainly ups the difficulty rating.
Yeah, it does. Now, Darren, is there any different kind of hides like you guys have there that we wouldn't have here? Like when you came here, you saw the LPCs that you didn't necessarily have at home. Do you have some at home that you have not seen when you were here?
No. Look, I don't think is the short answer. I don't think there's anything that we're doing differently that isn't being done over in the US. And in fact, I mean, a lot of the time, some of these new caches or concepts or designs get put together and locals think that's fantastic until we realize that, well, even after we realize that it's one of our locals who've gone to the States or to Europe and have picked up on that idea and then brought it back. So I think at the moment, the exchange is probably more from the US to Australia. There's certainly within Australia a trend within each city. Each city sort of has more of one particular type of cache than another. And in my podcast, I've probably mentioned a few times that, say, Adelaide and Canberra, those two cities have a lot of puzzle caches. Now, the reason why they have a lot of puzzle caches is because they are fairly small, compact cities. And they've filled, and they have a lot of geocaches in those cities too, the players or participants, I should say. So they got to the point where there wasn't any room to put anywhere, to put a cache anywhere that was interesting or exciting. So then they added the puzzle element to it to make that cache more interesting. In Brisbane, there seems to be a high number of micros. For some reason, they use a lot of Altoids or what we call here eclipse tins. And in Sydney seems to be fairly there's no huge trend. I mean, it's difficult enough sometimes driving around the streets in this busy city. That seems to take up a lot of your time finding caches. So, answer to your question, Andy, I don't think there's anything that we've done uniquely different at this stage, but maybe a local might correct me down the track.
All right. Now, I hear that there's a first mega event in Australia. You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, look, this is pretty exciting for us down here because we hear about all mega events that occur over in the US, and there's been discussion for a number of years to try and get one and held down here. And we know that I think you need a 500 participants in it. And while that doesn't sound like a lot, we only have about 2,500 active teams in Australia, and we're spread right across an area equivalent to the United States. So to get them all to the one point is difficult. But fortunately, a group of geocachers in a town or a city called Wagga Wagga, now it's spelled Wagga Wagga, but we pronounce it Wagga. It's about halfway between Sydney and Melbourne, and it's fairly close to Canberra. They're going to be putting on a mega event in Easter 2010, so in April next year. And it's been really exciting because already just through forum posts in Australia and on Groundspeak and a few other places, they've been able to generate enough people that I think they're about up to 80% of that 500 mark. So they're just over 400, maybe 450 people have said, yep, we would like to come. So we're hoping that in the next few months, Groundspeak will say, yep, we can give you the mega event seal of approval, and then it will all happen. And I'm excited because I think Wagga's a fairly fun town to be in. There's a lot of caches down there. And I think it's just going to be a great event in April next year. So everyone from around the world, come down to Australia. It's a great excuse. And the weather around April is pretty good.
All right. Now, there's a question in our chat room here. It says that do our accents sound funny to you? Like I know when I was over in Australia, everyone said I had a really cool accent, and I said I don't have an accent. But so the question is posed to you: do our accents sound funny to you?
It depends where in the States you're from. I find that actually I could get into trouble here now if I highlight areas. Look, the accents they sound funny, and they sound funny when you guys pronounce certain words that we pronounce differently. I mean, I think the one that made me laugh the most on one of the podcasts was those things that float in the ocean that usually have a bell or a light on the top.
A buoy.
What do you call them over there?
A buoy.
A buoy. Yeah, we call them a buoy. So, you know, it took me a long time to work out what a buoy is. I must say, I mean, I love Montu Ryder's accent as well. I find the people down in the south, they have a stronger accent, they're a little more laid back sounding. So you know, it's kind of cool listening to them as well. But you know, I think you know the web has made us all international. I think we're getting all used to how we all speak.
Yeah, I have to admit, listening to podcasts from all over the globe makes it a little easier to understand everyone too.
Yeah, it is great. The podcasts, have connected us. You know, we can talk, and talk to anybody pretty much we want. And I really enjoy doing the podcast and listening to all sorts of different podcasts too.
I mean, you reminded me of a story or an incident that happened to me. Sorry to cut in there. When I was in Houston, I think it was about 10 years ago, and I was queuing up to cash a traveler's check at one of the centers there. And I had to show my identification, and I took out my license. And at the time, I was living in the Australian Capital Territory. So in big, big words at the top, big letters, it said Australia on the top of my license. And there was this woman standing behind me, and she just kept looking at me with a smile. And then eventually the cashier asked me a question, and I replied. And She just burst out laughing. She said, "Oh, thank God you spoke. I wanted to hear your accent. You got such a great accent from down under." And I turned around and I said, "What accent, lady? You're the one who's got an accent."
Yeah, that's one of the things that I found when I was in Australia. I was visiting the Western, in Perth, or however you say it. You guys say it. Again, we say things differently. But, everyone said to me, you have an accent. And obviously, I don't hear it. But it was interesting, I finally, I think by the end of my month, got used to, hearing the Australian accent and didn't think much about it. Then I come home and it sounds funny to me when no one has the Australian accent.
Well, listen, I'll give you guys a very quick lesson on how to pronounce two other cities in Australia, because if you want to sound Australian, this is how you pronounce them. So the southern capital, which is where the bushfires are happening at the moment, you guys say Melbourne. It's just Melbourne, but M-A-L-B-I-N, Melbourne. And the other one is the capital city. A lot of people say Canberra. We just shorten it once again, and we just say Canberra. Like what a woman wears, Canberra.
Gotcha. Is there any other questions for Darren? You can either put it in the chat room here, or go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Well, if there are no other questions, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Join us every Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call our line live and be on our show, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or just sign on to TalkShoe.com. Our show notes and all of our links to all of our past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line too, and that number is 206-350-3GPS anytime, and leave us a voicemail. Have a great week and happy caching.